I'm joined in the studio now by Kate Lochte and Ryan Walker, who recently became among the select few to complete the Spartan Death Race and live to tell his experience.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Ryan, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Ryan's son of Mike and Tanya Walker of Madisonville, and like his dad, is a State Farm insurance agent in Murray and played football at Sinner College. And I say all that because, you know, just trying to figure out why you would get involved in a Spartan death race with with what you do and your background. You're a CrossFit trainer, but you chose this race. So why?
Sure. Well, yeah, most of the people that choose this race, there was lots of military personnel, firefighters, people with that kind of background. So I didn't meet any other insurance agents, but I chose this race just because of the challenge. You know, at the time I'd done some smaller Spartan races. You know, a lot of people have heard of the Tough Mudders and all the obstacle races that are around these days. The Spartan race series is one of the most popular. I'd done some of those races and really enjoyed them and just was looking for something else out there. And I'd heard about this race. I watched a lot of the videos. And at first it was just something, man, that seems pretty cool. And then it just kind of grew in me to, man, I'd really like to try this. And then, you know, grew into, I really want to do this, and I know I can do it. And from there, I was already in pretty good shape, but I really started training hard. I was already probably training 3 days a week, but I went from training, you know, mornings and afternoons many days, so probably seven to eight workouts per week, and really lost about 30 pounds through the whole process. But I had a great time. I'm really, really glad I did it.
So you think after completing, which in itself is a feat, do you still think it's a pretty cool thing to do?
I do, yes. It was one of the most fun things I've ever done. Obviously, there was lots of times where I was very miserable, but I'm very glad I did it, and I'm glad my brother was there with me to, you know, experience it with me.
And we chatted earlier about your brother Russ Walker's blog at NoRoomForHipsters.com.
That's right.
It's a really good place to find pictures of Ryan and the experiences. But for radio today, give us a snapshot of beginning to end race.
Sure. Well, for one thing, going into this race, we had no idea what to expect. So that's one of the another things that attracted me to it. You know, most races, everything's fair. You know exactly what you're going to be doing. This race, you know, based on previous races, the staple, you know, you're going to be splitting a lot of wood, you know, you're going to be carrying heavy loads for long distances, and that's pretty much it. But one surprise that they kind of threw on us this year, and it played with a lot of people's minds, was all the manual labor and the chores that we were doing. We were doing these chores at the race director's houses.
Give us the setting. Where were
sure.
you?
So we were up in Vermont, up in the Green Mountains. It was a beautiful setting. You know, you couldn't have been in a more beautiful place. So I try to keep that in mind and, you know, help that keep me in a positive attitude. But so we were doing lots of manual chores for this guy. And, you know, all the racers had been training so hard to, you know, prepared to carry tires up mountains and all. And here we found ourselves, you know, doing trail work. And it wasn't very hard. We dug he was putting a drain in his backyard. So we had to dig out the drain, and the water was running one way, and we had to make it go the other way. So stuff like that nobody was expecting to do, and a lot of people let that mess with them. Man, I'm here doing this guy's chores. This isn't what I trained for. So it was a genius move by the race directors because their whole goal is to get people to quit. They want it to be a challenging race. They know people train hard for the physical stuff, so they try to throw stuff in there that you're not expecting, that you didn't train for. So we did stuff like that. We had to do some hiking there as well. But the first main thing that we did was to build a stone staircase up a mountain. It was anywhere from a mile to a mile and a half up this mountain. And it was pretty steep. And they split us up into teams of 10 with 20 people on each team. And we would just have big – I have no idea how much these things would weigh on average. But, I mean – it would take all you could do for maybe two men to roll them up on one side, and then they would lash them up with rope, and then they'd stick a big steel bar through them, and six guys would hoist it up on our shoulders and just take it up the mountain to its spot and dig a hole for it, and then, you know,
go back down
and get another rock. So we started that probably around lunchtime on Friday, and we did that all through the night and almost until it got light again on Saturday.
I bet it was beautiful when you got through.
It was. I did get the chance, but it was getting dark on Sunday night the next time I got to see that stone staircase. So I would definitely love to go back one day and really get to enjoy much more casual pace the stone staircase.
Because you got it done, and then you did what?
They split us up different parts of the trail. I started off with my group at the bottom, and they really played a lot of the mind games. That was they warned you up front that you would get the chance to eliminate three people from your team at some point during the night if they weren't working hard. So that gave everybody the incentive to not just sandbag and lay around and let everybody else do the work. So my brother, he took that as an opportunity to kind of suck up to my team, and kind of he brought us all pizza and so that nobody would want to eliminate me because I've got the great support team that's bringing pizza. But that never happened. We never even had the opportunity to vote people off.
And it was a mind game then.
It was just something to get you motivated to not slack off and try to, you know, pace yourself. They wanted you to do the work. So we did that all through the night. And one memory I'll never forget is whenever we had finished our part and it was dark at this point, and we were hiking up towards the top of the mountain and catching up with everybody else. And I turned the corner and looked up, and finally we saw everybody. And there was probably 150 people working on a short stretch. And it was almost like a movie where everybody's got their headlamps on and it's pitch dark, and you can just see this lit staircase from everybody's headlamps. And that was pretty magical.
Pretty
I wish
neat.
I could have gotten a picture of what that looked like. But so we finally finished that up, and they were so impressed with our work that they actually let us rest for about 30 minutes at the and then I don't know what time it was. It was still dark, but it was getting close to being light again. And I guess just to back up, we started Friday morning at 8:30 is when that started.
And you finished when?
Monday at 6:30 in the morning.
Oh,
so
man.
70 hours. And
No sleep?
No sleep, except at the very end I got a brief opportunity to sleep. But the race was over at that point for me. But going back to the top of the mountain, so this is almost light on Saturday morning, and they had us we had a required gear list that we had to bring certain items. One was some hand shears, and so we were instructed to get our hand shears out, and the top of this mountain had lots of brush on it and had a little bitty small cabin, and so we had to take our hand shears out and clear all the brush. It was probably 2 to 3 acres of, you know, tall vines and grass
with
and things
hand shears.
With hand shears. So luckily, you know, it's at this point pretty much everybody's still in it. There may have been a few injuries and a few people drop out, but there's roughly 200 people working on it. So it, you know, within an hour or two, we had that done. I don't know how long we were up there, but it was light by the time we finished. And they would send us in small groups down to the bottom of the mountain in a different direction. And we were also required to have hay and grass seed. And parts of the rock stone staircase, we would throw down our grass seed and then our hay around the staircase. So that
you did the landscaping as well.
We did the landscaping around our stone staircase. And so once everybody had done that, then we hiked to a different area, and they had a huge pile of gravel. And we had to, some people had 5-gallon buckets and some people didn't, but you had to take the equivalent of a 5-gallon bucket
of gravel
up a pretty steep hill to a different part of the trail and put that along the trail to, you know, do some more trail maintenance. And so I didn't have a bucket, but I just put it in my backpack, which was much easier to carry than in a bucket. So I made 3 trips there, and that wasn't too bad. But then we were instructed to pick up a rock. And since I shouldn't have made that third trip. A lot of people just did 2. And at that point, I still wasn't quite sure what was important and what wasn't. So I tried to squeeze in a third trip. And then by doing that, I got myself in the back of the line. And they had a big pile of rocks that they had piled up. And by the time I got there, all the smaller rocks had been taken.
Yeah.
And so I had to get it had to be so big. If it was too small, they would say that, you know, they make you go get a bigger one. So I got a really big one. And that was tough. It was I don't know how much it weighed, but at least 50 pounds. And it was to carry that for several miles. And the one of the race directors was in the front of the line. We were on a real narrow trail hiking over this mountain. And he was
with the rocks.
With the rocks, yes. And everybody, he would be, I guess at some point, I guess he took his machete out and cleared a new trail, because I noticed we were on a completely different trail at one point. And we were on our way over to split some wood. And so we finally got there, and I was kind of in the middle of the pack or so. I tried to pick up some time. And so I got to the wood at a pretty good time, and there was a huge pile of wood. I mean, it was probably 50, you know, I don't know, close to 10 foot tall, and just a huge, you know, covering a huge area. And so we were, you know, picking up our wood, and I was thought I had a good idea of just getting all the smaller pieces of wood that I knew I could split real easy. And we had to split 30 pieces of wood, and then supposedly we were done. And they were giving us about 4 hours to do that. So I immediately split 15 pieces of wood with no problem. And they interrupted us at some point and made us start taking our wood to a certain area. And it wasn't very far away, so that was pretty easy. And in the midst of all that, I was getting more wood, and I started realizing I was counting my pieces of wood, and I realized every time I'd come back with another piece, I still had the same number of wood. So somebody was taking my wood, and while I was out going to get more. So I ran out of good pieces, and I had to start going to get these big knotty things that were ended up taking me obviously a lot longer.
So would the race organizers have done that to you? Would they have?
No, it was other racers that was taking my wood, but I really think it was just an honest mistake, because my wood, I was trying to be smart and efficient, and I had my little area was very close to the big pile of wood. And once that pile of wood went away, I think people got my pile of wood confused for that, and they just started taking mine. So then there was another pile
Good
of wood
grief.
Further away. So while I was going to get other wood, people were taking mine. So, and this was at the heat of the day on Saturday, and I was, and they started threatening us with this time cutoff that we had that night at 8 o'clock. So I was in a, you know, pretty big rush to finish the wood. And in the meantime, I didn't drink or eat nearly as much as I should have, and kind of got in a bad situation.
Your brother's blog said you were getting a little goofy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if goofy is a word, but I was starting to feel pretty sick. And also I was just really upset at myself for letting myself get to that point. And
so how'd you get out of that?
Funk? Yeah, he kept making me drink water. And as I was carrying my wood, he would just shove almonds down my throat, you know, in my mouth. And so he was like hand feeding me, because my hands were full. And so he kind of, you know, I got a few chances to eat. So really just took the time and really started focusing on that, and slowly came out of it. But eventually they started making us carry our wood a whole lot further after we'd split it. And that's what took the longest time, was just not really the splitting of the wood, but just carrying it as far as we had to carry it to stack
grief.
It.
And then after that, you did this barbed wire
right.
thing?
Right. But before I could do that, some people, they didn't even have to split nearly as much wood as I did, and others did. And so that's when you kind of start seeing the race start being different for different people. And I knew that would probably be the case, and I was really just trying to focus on my race. You know, we all had to do our own race and not pay attention to what other people are doing around you, because it's going to be different for every person. And a lot of people were getting upset because they'd see other people, you know, having a lot easier than what they're having. And so like after I split my 30 pieces of wood, he told me to split another 5 pieces. And then after that, I had to carry more wood for probably another hour. And so I was getting concerned, because this time cutoff was coming, and it was starting to get later on in the afternoon, and I knew I still had to do this barbed wire course that was supposed to be pretty difficult. And so I was starting to get pretty nervous. And in each of these major tasks, they would give us a chip. So I'm, you know, just waiting for him to finally give me my chip. And so finally that happened, and I was released to go to the barbed wire course. And I was probably towards the back of the pack at this point, because I'd had to do so much extra stuff. And I got to the barbed wire course, and I was expecting, I knew it was going to be over rocks and stuff like that, and I was expecting it to be pretty rough, but I was, very happy. It was more like a muddy, rocky slip and slide than I was thinking, like through a creek bed or something. But this was more of like a slip and slide, and it was, I thought it was pretty fun, really. I mean, it cooled us off. You're getting wet, and it's they had control of the water, and every so often they would release a bunch of water into this culvert, and it would kind of real cool you off, which was really good after as overheated as I'd gotten in the woods. So that really helped me. And so you had to go through this barbed wire course, and you, at the end you played a card game, and if you lost, you had to do another lap until you'd done five. And so if you won, you got to be released. And so I did my one, and I won the card game. And so I finally realized the people that got there early and got to split the wood, that didn't have to split as much wood, the deck was stacked against them, and so they had to do all five laps, or most of them did at least. And when I got there, they had switched the decks, so the deck was stacked in my favor. So it was really just the people either were going to be, you know, doing the barbed wire, or you're going to be splitting wood. You're going to be working either way. And it was just a way for them to, what we thought was not being fair, really was just a way to bottleneck, to keep a bottleneck from forming at the barbed wire course. So they're very smart, and but you don't really realize that until until the race is over or much later.
So the barbed wire, when you finish that, what time are you at?
It was, when I finished that, I had 45 minutes to get to, no, I'm sorry. It was probably 6:30 because I
6:30 night on Saturday?
Mm-hmm. Right, because it took me, I know grief. Once I got to the checkoff point, I had about an hour to 45 minutes to relax, eat. They actually had food for us, and that was surprising. They had a catered meal at this really nice barn that I think they probably hold weddings at. And so that was kind of a shock that in the middle of this race,
so we're having a catered meal. So y'all are sitting down to a catered meal all full of mud and everything?
Yeah. Right, and knowing, you know, it's just the calm before the storm. So
in a nutshell, what happens through Saturday night into Sunday morning?
So at 8 o'clock, we still have our rocks at this point. And
you're still carrying the rock?
Right. We're still carrying our rock. You know, obviously at each obstacle, you get to sit it down. But at the barbed wire, you had to put your rock in your pack. And the first, for the people that did all five, you had to do your first with your pack and the rock inside your pack underneath the barbed wire. And then the last three, you could just do it with your own body. And I didn't realize once I'd won that card game and I got my chip, I thought that just allowed me to skip my second round. So I got back in line and did another. I'd gotten to one end of the barbed wire. Of course, I'm just doing it with my body at this point because I got to skip my second one. And then I realized, you know what, I've got my chip. What am I doing still doing this barbed wire course? So I asked somebody else.
You had so much fun.
I did. It really wasn't that bad, so I wasn't complaining. I knew I had to hurry. But so I asked somebody else. I was like, I got my chip. Do I need to be here? And they're like, I don't think so. So I bolted out of there and ran back up to the top and asked them, and they're like, no. So I ran back down the hill, you know, or hustled down the hill, and my brother was surprised to see me there so quick. So we got to the time cutoff with some extra time, which was nice because I was able to, you know, dry my feet off, and my feet were still pretty good shape at this point. And that was really my big concern, my knees and my feet going into this. And so at 8 o'clock, they make this big speech, and they try to make this overnight hike sound really scary. And I'm sure there's a lot of city people there that aren't used to being out in the woods, especially at nighttime. And so they build it up to be this really wild mountain and, you know, bears and all that kind of stuff. And they said that people have gotten so lost in the past that if you quit during the hike, they're not going to let you turn around. You're just going to have to keep going. You'll just move to the back of the line, but you'll still have to keep going because they don't want people getting lost this year. So that alone scared a lot of people, and probably maybe 10 or 15 people didn't even attempt the hike. They started quitting, and the rocks were really starting to make people drop at this point. And so we took off on the mountain, and there was a couple guys I'd met that I really liked them. You know, we'd been doing a lot of the race together, and I could kind of tell physically they didn't seem quite as strong, but mentally they seemed like they were still in a good place. So I hung back with them, which kind of ended up being a pretty big mistake, because the group I would have been with, they got to the swim several hours before what I got to. So the group I hung back with, they had some people that had knew the mountain really well. And of course, I have no idea where I'm at. There's lots of intersections you're seeing on this trail, and it's poorly marked on, you know, purposely. And
they, at night. Yeah.
And so I knew I couldn't just go off on my own, but the group I was in, they were wanting to take more breaks than they were wanting to hike. And we had to be, you know, at the lake reservoir at a certain time. So I was starting to get kind of frustrated, especially we got to a certain intersection and we spent about an hour trying to decide which way to go. And so,
Good grief.
So finally we made a decision. Of course, I'm just sitting there waiting because I have no idea. You know, somebody's got a map and another guy's been there before and we're just waiting for them to make a decision. So finally, they made the decision and we realized early on that it was the right decision. You could see footprints and stuff like that. So I eventually just left them and I thought we were headed in the right direction and that I could just look for footprints and tracks. But it got to a certain point where it turned into a road, and I panicked and didn't think that was right. And I probably was about 45 minutes ahead of them because I turned back around and hiked for 40 minutes before I found them again. And they were like, "What'd you see?" I was like, "I think I'm lost. I think I made a wrong turn." I was like, "I turned into a road." And they're like, "No, that's perfect." So I was like, "Man." So I turned back around, go back down the mountain and to where I had been. And we made a few more wrong turns, but finally we were supposed to be by the lake at a certain point, and we were supposed to take a trail called the Bloodroot Trail, which is just a terrible, really hard, difficult trail. But they intentionally got us lost so that we would not take that trail. And so some of us were thinking that we might be disqualified or at least get heavily penalized for not taking the correct trail. But once we got there that morning, we realized they did all that on purpose and they got us lost on purpose. So a lot of people were so frustrated by getting lost because everybody got lost. And so many people were frustrated by that. A lot of people quit just because of that alone.
You know what we should do is we should say how many people about entered and how many actually finished.
I would say about 220 or so people started the race, and 41. There were 41 official finishers, and there were 20 unofficial finishers.
So just briefly now, because we're running out of time.
Oh, okay.
Tell me the time it took you to get through the hike, and then what happened
So we got to the hike, we got to the swim at about 7 or so in the morning, and you had to swim either 2 to 3 miles, and it was really cold water. They were pulling a lot of people out of the water for signs of hypothermia, and it was really cold. When I first got there, one of the leaders was just shivering non-controllably, and I had to help him get his shirt off. So that really played a lot of mind games on people because, you know, that's going to be you here in a couple hours.
Yeah.
So, luckily got to have and I'm a terrible swimmer, but they made us use life jackets. So for me, that was very good. And I just, you know, did it one stroke at a time.
So you swim 2 miles and then what happened?
Then you spin a wheel for a chance to get out of your third mile. And I won that. And I wish they would have videotaped people's reactions because I was literally happier there than when I finished the race and got my skull. So but then we hiked back over the mountain. A few other things. We split a little bit more wood. They bind our feet together with rope, and we hop up a mountain, have to memorize some stuff, come back down. And then that's when the later on time cutoffs really start coming into play. And we had to sprint back up our stone staircase, memorize something that was in that cabin, come back down, answer some questions. And we were running fast. We were probably doing like 8 minute miles to make these cutoffs, you know, 60 hours in. That was tough. I was just completely out of, I just remember looking down at my feet and saying, "Wow, my feet are moving," because I didn't feel like I was in any control of my body at all. My brother was setting the pace for us, and I was just following him, and he was helping me figure out where to go. And so finally, we get to the end, and we make the final cutoff by midnight on, going into Monday, and they said you had to start a card game, and you drew a card, and each card represented a number of exercises. And they sent us home after we'd done that for a few hours, and they told us to come back at 6. So I got to sleep for 3 hours. I came back at 6 o'clock Monday, played, had to give them all my chips, and had to go all in on a card game, and I won my card game and got my skull, and I was done at about 6:30.
Can you believe that story? This is Ryan Walker. Ryan is a State Farm insurance agent in Murray, and we've been listening to him tell us about the Spartan death race that he finished. When was it exactly?
It was started June 21st.
My goodness. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you for having me.
And congratulations.
Thank you.